Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Wednesday Night Live, 7th of May, 2024. A tech rant. Why is it that Outlook just can't close? Do you have that shortcut? You know, you do your function windows, and the shortcut is force kill Outlook. Why? Can it not close? It's just impossible. Does it need a priest, an exorcism? Why does Outlook not just close? It's a mystery. You shouldn't have to go into Task Manager to close down your email app. Sad but true. All right. Ready for questions, comments, issues, whatever is on your mind. Your Outlook randomly closes. Remember, when you're around your cell phone, it's important to think of random things so they don't know what ads to serve you. Super essential and important. For donors, just a note in case you didn't see it posted. I did a 2-day interview with Keith Knight, who interviewed me before about philosophy and UPB, and we did real-time relationships. The first one is out for donors and subscribers, so if you want to check that out, fdrurl.com/rumble, and also subscribestar.com/rumble. A really good conversation about, it's funny because in terms of kind of order of importance in practical terms, real-time relationships is one of the most important because it's sort of practical guide for relationships in your life. And UPB for ethics, of course, peaceful parenting for dealing with your own childhood. So you should, if you haven't checked out Real-Time Relationships, The Logic of Love, I listened to it again. It's a nice 9-hour audiobook. So I listened to it again, and that's pretty good. It's, you know, 15 years later, I might do a couple of edits, probably would, but it's a good book to understand how philosophy applies to relationships. And isn't that kind of sad that that's not what philosophy has really been talking about, what philosophers have really been talking about much in terms of relationships? So as James is pointing out, part two, part the second is coming for donors tomorrow. So I hope you will check it out. It's a 3-hour conversation about the philosophy of love and connection and relationships and sustainability and so on. So I hope that you will check it out. All right. Hello, Free Domain. Listening to your novel, The Future. Well, I hope you're starting it tomorrow. Back up to David talking about the children who were missed. I'm feeling the heartache of the pain, the moral dilemma of privacy, hands-off approach, and then being responsible or feeling responsible when agency is abused to harm others. Maybe the closest we get to knowing how God feels to some degree about humanity as a whole, since we are his spirit children. Really thought-provoking and heart-wrenching stuff. Thank you. Yeah, so it's not much of a spoiler. My novel, The Future, is set 500 years from now after the cataclysms, which I talk about the beginning of in my novel, The Present, which you should, again, these are great, great books, freedomain.com/books. You know, even if you don't read novels as a whole, I mean, it's really great stuff. You know, it's deep, the characters are strong, and the stories, lines are great. So it's about a future society, and how does it deal with child abuse is one of the central elements of a couple of chapters in the book, in particular one chapter. And it is, of course, complete wish fulfillment for me, which is, wouldn't it have been nice if my brother and I had been treated this way with regards to my mother? But we weren't, and because of that, we get a book like The Future. So you should check it out. I mean, it's a vivid way to... Utopia is very rarely shown in science fiction. I was interested in... Thomas More wrote a book called Utopia, of course, you know, 500 years ago or whatever. And I used to read... I read that. There was a little bit of some idealism in Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which I read. But none of this in particular leaves any kind of impression on me. But Utopia... in a practical sense, in a moral sense. I mean, you could argue Star Trek is kind of a utopia and so on, but it's way too collectivist for me. So can a novelist, a creative person, and a philosopher like myself, can we write a novel accurately and emotionally and morally portraying an ideal society without a violation of human nature, right? Because, I mean, a lot of people write stories about a perfect world with the unfortunate aspect that it requires a complete and total violation of human nature. If only people weren't tribal, if only people weren't motivated by profits, if only people blah, 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 right? Well, what if human beings don't need to be changed, but the system needs to align with virtue and human nature? Well, that, of course, is the basic premise of my novel, The Future, and I hope that you will check it out. It's free, and it's free in large part due to the lovely donors. So, yeah, it is. It's a very powerful book for me. It's very powerful to write, to write the world that I so desperately want to live in, and raise my daughter in, which is a consummation devoutly to be wished. It is agony to be this conceptually close to a perfect world, and knowing that it's going to be hundreds of years until it has a chance is tough. And knowing that the barriers to the perfect world is not human nature, it is not coercion, it is simply, I mean, the barrier to the perfect world is simply people's belief in things that are false. That's all. If people stopped believing in things that are false, we could have a beautiful world this time next year. So, we must be patient. Errors take a long time to exit stage left these days. All right. Sapanta says, I found reading or listening to The Present and The Future, these two novels, I got a lot of ideas and perspectives in philosophy click more than any podcast or nonfiction book has. Seeing the ideas in characters really makes a difference. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, The Future belongs to the best storytellers. Sadly, not the most rational, but to the best storytellers. And unfortunately, the left are very good at telling stories. It's propaganda, I get all of that, but they're very good at telling stories. And it's funny, you know, because I will regularly see on social media people complaining that, like, where's the art coming from the right? And again, I wouldn't specifically say that I'm on the right, but where's the art coming from, say, the anti-leftists? So leftists have dominant power at the moment, so that's who needs to be opposed. And nobody ever mentions my novels. Nobody ever mentions my novels, and I get it. I love writing novels. I'm working on another one at the moment. Oh, man. I wrote some of the best dialogue I've ever written 2 days ago. Like, honestly, just crackerjack dialogue about a breakup of a romantic relationship based upon betrayal. It's like, you know how people avoid the topic and then it just drops like an MOAB in the conversation. It had me on the edge of my seat and I was writing it. That's how vivid and real it feels to me. I feel like I'm transcribing and I can see every freckle on the characters' faces. So good. Maybe we'll do some of it later. All right. especially peaceful parenting. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Did you know Oxford University is older than the Aztec Empire? I was trying to explain this. This is from Milo Yiannopoulos, at Nero. It's a bitterly funny, of course, account to follow. And I have a lot of respect for the man, if that means anything. So he pointed out, Let me ask you if you can puzzle this one out. What was the biggest year for ringtone sales, and how much were they? Like, what was the total aggregate of the market? What was the biggest year ringtone sales? So you used to buy different ringtones than the ones that came automatically with your phone. So what was the biggest year for ringtone sales, and how much was it? Like, I got to tell you, I've never bought a ringtone in my life. I don't think so. I think maybe I bought one or two different backgrounds for like $1.50 when I was farting around on a phone once, but I never bought a ringtone. Although I've often wanted to replace my, when I call my wife, to have it be, honey, 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 until her eyes just explode. That it would. Of course, she wouldn't think that I'm calling her. She'd just think I'm in the next room and need something. Honey, honey. Just play that over and over and no court would convict you of strangulation. So people are guessing 2006, $1 million. 2012, $100 million. 2003, no, not correct. The biggest year for ringtone sales was 2007, and it was American $1.2 billion. $1.2 billion. Baby, you just ain't seen nothing yet. Here's something you're never gonna forget. That was a joke song actually put out by Bachman Turner Overdrive that they just found later and released, became their biggest thing. Their biggest thing. Crazy. So, do you have kids, or are you yourself in university, or do you have any sort of portal, nether region window to what's going on in academia at the moment? Because, well, if you do, it's pretty wild. Steve McGuire on X wrote this. For higher education, AI's takeover is a full-blown existential crisis. College is just how well I can use ChatGPT at this point. I think we are years or months probably away from a world where nobody thinks using AI for homework is considered cheating. It isn't as if cheating is new. But now, as one student put it, the ceiling has been blown off. Who could resist a tool that makes every assignment easier with seemingly no consequences? Massive numbers of students are going to emerge from university with degrees and into the workforce who are essentially illiterate. The humanities, and writing in particular, are quickly becoming an anachronistic art elective like basket weaving. Many teachers now seem to be in a state of despair. Every time I talk to a college student about this, the same thing comes up. Oh, sorry. Every time I talk to a colleague, I guess the professors, about this, the same thing comes up. Retirement. When can I retire? When can I get out of this? This is what we're all thinking now. And the Intelligencer wrote, this is from James D. Walsh, everyone is cheating their way through college. ChatGPT has unraveled the entire academic project. And it's funny because on my word processor, when I'm writing, a little bubble thing pops up and I can help you with that. And it's like, get thee behind me, Satan. Would you like a rant? And would the rant be on a 1 to 10, on a 1 to 10 scale? I don't know, you know, as my voice is repaired, my ear is repairing, I don't know whether it would be too startling for y'all to have a vivid and passionate rant. This might be a tear the hat off the head rant. All right, 10, 10, 10, 5, 11, 1.5, well, that's very specific. Right. Oh, Oh, the poor professors. Yeah, oh dear. Are you going to actually have to try and figure out whether your students can think or not? Are you actually going to have to get back to maybe oral cross-examination of your students? Are you going to somehow die from not picking up your $250,000 a year paychecks by sloughing off all of the badly written ballpoint pen essays on your teacher's assistants while you prepare yourself for yet another fucking sabbatical or a conference in Hawaii to study whether nouns actually exist in Kantian reality? Are you actually going to have to teach in a way that motivates students to learn how to think? Or is everyone just going through the same stupid bullshit jump through hoops? You give me obedience, I give you the degree. Absolute, total nonsense. Are the professors actually going to have to motivate their students to do something other than go through the ritual of praying before the electronic gods of AI in order to cough up a vaguely coherent essay that is based upon the preassembled thoughts of everyone in the known universe? Because that's all university has been for as long as I was there. It was almost all complete bullshit. Swallow, regurgitate, rearrange, pass. That's all it was. That's all it was. You would do a mind map of what the professor believed. You would absorb it. You would regurgitate it with some rearranging. What is wrong with oral exams exactly? Oh, but you see, oral exams, they're a little tough, my friends. They're a little tough. And you might embarrass people. And people might get mad at you. Like, oral exams, that's a lot of work. See, the way the university works is you stuff, God, what was it in the University of Toronto? Oh, how did it run? The University of Toronto, back in the day, had like, I don't know, what, 1,000, 1,500 people in the intro to psych courses. So the professors, they would, you know, spill over rooms, there'd just be a bunch of people looking at TVs and making notes. And the professor, you know, wouldn't do much other than lecture. And then the TAs would handle everything, the teacher's assistant. And, you know, they get, 4 months off in the summer. They work a cozy 10 to 15 hours a week. And every fifth year is a sabbatical where they get paid to write books that nobody fucking reads. It is a livestock grinding, ink paper substitute for IQ because they're illegal, bunch of bullshit, university as a whole. I did 2 years of an English degree at Glendon campus of York University. I did almost 2 years at theater school, writing, acting, playwriting. I did 2 years finishing my undergraduate in history at McGill University. And then I did a year and change of a graduate degree, getting my master's in the history of philosophy at the University of Toronto. I'm sure a lot of y'all went to school, to university. Do you remember a single thing that you were taught? I think it was Charles Taylor, took an entire year course on political science. Now, I'm actually quite interested in political science, written entire books on it that have done quite well, you know. At one point, my books were being downloaded at the rate of 100,000 a month. 5,000 in Canada is a bestseller in the whole lifespan of the book. So what is that, a 20x bestseller per month? So, well, that was more than one book. And I remember absolutely nothing from any of it. I did an entire full year course on the history of Rome and the Roman Empire. I remember nothing from it at all. I do remember a little bit from the rise of Protestantism, of course. I remember a little bit about that. I did a lot of work on that, on medieval populations with charts and graphs. I took the bullet. Oh, what else? I took, God, it's even hard to remember now. Oh yeah, the rise of capitalism and the socialist response. It battled like crazy, the professor, who was, for me, a standard Marxist built like a bearded fridge, non-entity of resentment. So if you, somebody says, I went to a top engineering school, did a lot for me. Sure. Yeah, I get it. I mean, this is very practical skills. I'm talking about the arts. History, English. I did a lot of theater, acted in a lot of plays. I snap my finger, get a lead. It was pretty easy, right? So the problem is that ChatGPT is disrupting the money printing conveyor belt of non-education that passes for higher education in these diploma mills bullshit facilities. Like, people might actually have to be enthusiastic about learning. People might actually have to be enthusiastic and compelling in their teaching. And people might actually have to engage in debate rather than just type a print and get graded. So I love what AI is doing to universities. Love it. If you can't beat AI, you shouldn't be in university. It used to be that only 10% of people went to university because it was kind of the elite. Right now it's widened and expanded and all of that kind of stuff because nobody talks about IQ. So, yeah. And now, of course, in some universities, you have to have introduction to basic math. It's got to be part of it, right? Oh, my God. I mean, everybody knows, of course, that schools are teaching almost nothing these days except guilt. And it's very sad. It's very, very sad. All right, let me just get to you. I haven't even checked whether there are any donations. Total life tips, zero. Oh, my God. Freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. I would really appreciate that. And we could say really a little bit more than appreciate it. It's fairly important for the show as a whole. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. So, yeah. The fake teaching, like the fake thinking has now caught up with the fake teaching to the point where they're canceling each other out. And yeah, universities need to be reclaimed from the propagandizing idiots who largely inhabit, not exclusively, but largely inhabit its corridors. Well, I guess university hopefully will go through the same process that people who knew how to use a sextant and a slide rule have gone through. Oh my gosh. Somebody says, this is from Zito on X. The kids are cooked. Chungun Roy Lee stepped onto Columbia University's campus this past fall and by his own admission proceeded to use generative artificial intelligence to cheat on nearly every assignment. As a computer science major, he depended on AI for his introductory programming classes. I just dump the prompt into ChatGPT and hand in whatever it spat out. By his rough math, AI wrote 80% of every essay he turned in. At the end, I'd put on the finishing touches. I'd just insert 20% of my humanity, my voice, into it. Lee was born in South Korea. Ah, yes. Those South Koreans. Totally typical of people who cheat in schools. And I remember many years ago, there was a, you know, stay in school, kids. And it was a young Asian girl who was like dropping out. It's like, ah, yes. The Asian girls just forming their own gangs and dropping out of school all the time. Anyway, it's just natural, right? Lee was born in South Korea and grew up outside Atlanta. Should be Atlantis, but we'll go with Atlanta, where his parents ran a college prep consulting business. He said he was admitted to Harvard early in his senior year of high school. But the university rescinded its offer after he was suspended for sneaking out during an overnight field trip before graduation. Wow. A year later, he applied to 26 schools. He didn't get into any of them, so he spent the next year at community college before transferring to Columbia. His personal essay, which turned his winding road to higher education into a parable for his ambition to build companies, was written with help from ChatGPT. When he started at Columbia as a sophomore this past September, He didn't worry much about academics or his GPA. Most assignments in college are not relevant, he told me. They're hackable by AI, and they just had no interest in doing them. While other new students fretted over the university's rigorous core curriculum, described by the school as intellectually expansive and personally transformative. I bet you they used AI to come up with that marketing bullshit, too. Lee used AI to breeze through with minimal effort. When I asked him why he had gone through so much trouble to get into an Ivy League university only to offload all the learning to a robot, he said, well, it's the best place to meet your co-founder and your wife. In January 2023, just 2 months after OpenAI launched ChatGPT, a survey of 1,000 college students found that nearly 90% of them had used the chatbot to help with homework assignments. I suppose the other 10% were just lying. In its first year of existence, ChatGPT's total monthly visits steadily increased month over month until June, when schools let out for the summer. Yeah, traffic dipped again over the summer in 2024. Professors and teaching assistants increasingly found themselves staring at essays filled with clunky, robotic phrasing that, though grammatically flawless, didn't sound quite like a college student or even a human. 2.5 years later, students at large state schools like the Ivies, liberal arts schools in New England, universities abroad, professional schools, and community colleges are relying on AI to ease their way through every facet of their education. Generative AI chatbots, ChatGPT, but also Google's Gemini, Anthropic's Claude, Microsoft Copilot, and others take their notes during class, devise their study guides and practice tests, summarize novels and textbooks, and brainstorm, outline, and draft their essays. STEM students are using AI to automate their research and data analysis and to sail through dense coding and debugging assignments. College is just how well I can use ChatGPT at this point, a student in Utah recently captioned a video of herself copy and pasting a chapter from Genocide and Mass Atrocity textbook into ChatGPT. That's Wendy, right? Let me just double check this. Once the chatbot had outlined Wendy's essay, provided her with a list of topic sentences and bullet points of ideas, all she had to do was fill it in. Wendy delivered a tidy 5-page paper at an acceptably tardy 10:17 a.m. When I asked her how she did on the assignment, she said she got a good grade. I really like writing, she said, sounding strangely nostalgic for her high school English class the last time she wrote an essay unassisted. Honestly, she continued, I think there's beauty in trying to plan your essay. You learn a lot. You have to think, oh, what can I write in this paragraph? Or what should my thesis be? But she'd rather get good grades. An essay with ChatGPT, it's like it just gives you straight up what you have to follow. You just don't really have to think that much. See, why would people like thinking? Thinking just gets you punished. Right? It just gets you punished. That's all.
Well, you're some kind of teacher's pet, brainiac. Apple polisher.
How much did you get admired for thinking when you were younger? How much did you get admired for thinking when you were younger? Oh, my gosh. Great. No, I mean, the quicker that universities can implode into irrelevance, the greater the chance we have of at least postponing civilizational seppuku. Somebody says, my younger brother, 19, was going to art school for jazz performance. He said he was surrounded by people who seemed to skate through life. He ended up joining the military instead. Oh. Well, you're still skating. You're just getting pushed. Joe says, I'm tipping next week. Thank you. Freedomaid.com/donate to help out the show. At least in the U.S., we need to get government out of the loan business and allow student loans to be dischargeable in bankruptcy. The free market will take care of the rest. It's not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. The leftists need the universities, because if you can get people to pay for their own propaganda, that's fantastic. It's not going to happen. Also, imagine what it would be like to be the last guy who still had to pay for his loans and the next guy doesn't, or next guy gets to refuse them because he doesn't have to pay them back, right? So if you don't have to pay them, yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen, right? Denise, nice to see you, m'lady. She says, I just graduated my PhD in biochemistry this past Friday. Congratulations. I think that's wonderful. Biochemistry, if I remember rightly. I've always thought I'd be a researcher having my own lab, but I've recently decided that being in industry is a better choice than academia because of how bad everything is currently. Pray for me. It's a huge shift in my life, and I'm pretty scared. Yeah, well, science in government and academia has just turned into conformist superstition, non-reproducible stuff. So it's just terrible. Somebody says, my customers are now using ChatGPT to generate images for interior decorating purposes, visualizing how various options work with their space. It works surprisingly well, quite handy. Oh, yeah, like if you go to ChatGPT and you upload the image of a room and you say, what would go best in here? It's pretty good, right? You're the best, Steph. Thank you. It's actually Stefan, but I appreciate that. All right, hit me with a why if you're on a weight loss journey. Are you on any kind of weight loss journey? I want to know. I want to know. It's hard to imagine I wouldn't have used ChatGPT in college, honestly. Well, that's interesting. Most of you on some kind of weight loss journey. Always. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I haven't weighed myself in a while. I weighed myself today. I don't weigh myself at home. I don't really trust scales at home. But in a supermarket not too far from where I am is an actual physical scale, which I trust for whatever reason. If it's digital, I just assume it's mostly nonsense. But I did weigh myself. Now, at my maximum, I was 225 pounds or so. And what did I just weigh in at? What do you think? 225 at my max. There's a picture of me kind of bloated at some meetup. Yes. Well, not kind of bloated, just chunky. Just overweight. You got it, Alan. 180. Yeah, so I'm down 45 pounds from my max. Now, I mean, it's not the most honorable weight loss. I've just been concerned about my ear and my hearing and been concerned about tinnitus and blah, blah, blah. So, I just don't particularly eat when I'm concerned or waiting for things to settle because I'm... It's a 3-month healing process. I think I'm like 7 weeks in. So my voice is certainly better. Like I can speak better without it hurting in my ear, but it is still, the tinnitus is there for sure. For sure. But yeah, the doc says it'll settle down quite a bit too. So yeah. People are 37 pounds down. You're jogging right now as I listen to Free Domain. Oh, good. Good. No, frankly, I should gain some weight. I'm the other type, effort to gain and maintain weight. Yeah, yeah. It's not easy. 1.5 milligrams of cagrilintide? What is that? Cagrilintide. I don't know what that is. Congrats, Steph. Yeah, I mean, appreciate it. I feel, because I became an older parent, I feel it's fairly important to stay pretty healthy, if that makes sense. I don't want to be a burden to my daughter when she's having kids and married, and I don't want to be any kind of burden for that. So I work hard to stay pretty healthy. And then I get a virus in my inner ear. Well, just some bad luck. Just some bad luck. Down 160 pounds over the past 13 years. Holy crap. Well, good for you, man. Good for you. Peptides. I don't know. I mean, what do? I do a little creatine and CoQ2 enzymes. Are they a little bit of lutein for the eyes? So I don't. Yeah, and a little creatine. That's about it. But yeah, just have an ailment that's alarming and you'll lose weight. That's how it goes. All right, let me get to other questions, comments, donations, of course, very, very welcome. Is this true? I don't know. I'm going to just Maybe I'll grok this. Maybe I'll grok this. But there was a note that 80% of eligible men are not dating. Is that true? Let me just see here. 80%. 80% of eligible men. This is from Gender Studies for Men. John Davis, JDLLM. Large language model. 80% of eligible men are no longer dating. 80-20 rule. Pew Research study shows only 30% of U.S. men aged 18 to 29 are single and not dating. Okay. So, yeah, it does seem a bit high. It does seem a bit high. It's true for you at the moment, yeah. James says, my all-time max weight was around 315. Well over 15 years ago, down about 90 from that point, with a recent drop of 30 to 35 pounds in the last 2 years. Yes, we have seen that. James is turning into, we're painting the roses red, a playing card. Two-dimensional. That's pretty wild, man. I don't think it's 80%. I think that's the 80-20 thing. I think, what was it, Rollo Tomasi said, women are actually only dating the top 4.5%, which sounds like one of these things that is so specific, it can't really be the case. But I don't envy the guys out there at the moment, man. I don't envy the guys out there at the moment. All right, let me get to your questions and comments. Appreciate your thoughts. What do we got? Steph, when you started your software company, how long did it take to sell your first software? How long approximately do you think it should take to sell a startup product? So I built the software, I think it took 4 to 6 weeks. This was in Access, Microsoft Access 1.1, not even 2, 16-bit. But we had a commission to build some software, which we sold, and then we gave a good price on the sale, on the assumption that we could adapt it and resell it to others. So, how long should it take to sell a startup product? So, this is the way that I think you should work if you have a startup product. Well, actually, let me just make sure, is this of interest to people? If you hit me with a why, if this topic, sort of the entrepreneur stuff, and is it of interest to you? Is it of value to you if I talk about, because it's not specific to software, this is just how to get a business off the ground to begin with, because I've done like 3 and they've all been successful. This doesn't mean that, you know, some of it's luck and so on, right? But I'm batting 1,000 on 3 companies. Okay, good. All right. So we'll just talk about software at the moment, right? Oh, Eggy von Egginess. This way, I never have to remember to put the logo in because the logo is on the hat. There we go. Okay. So you want to find someone in the industry who's willing to work with you and get a free copy of the software, right? So my software was in environmental, they're called EMIS, Environmental Management Information Systems. So through my partner, we'll just call him Bob, right? So through Bob had contacts in the industry. So, and Bob also was in the industry. So Bob gave me some specifications and we worked with a company to make sure that it worked for them. And because it works for someone in the industry, it's probably going to work for others, or at least a fair proportion of it is going to work for others. So don't just, you know, build it and they will come is in a movie that's classified as fiction, because it is. You don't just build it and then they'll come. Don't do that. You have to work with someone in the industry to make sure that it matches needs somehow. And whatever you have to do to find someone in the industry who's willing to work with you, you know, and it could be just about anything. So the way that I worked with a company that will remain unnamed is they gave me a binder of the kind of reports they had to produce. And I reverse engineered from that binder to have software that could produce those reports. All right, so what kind of data do I need to gather? How is it best gathered? How do I need to collate it? How do I need to summarize it? And so on. And I remember wrestling like crazy to produce these reports to the point where I had to create tables on the fly, populate them, base the report on those tables. That was just nuts, how challenging it was. So you need to have the output that is of value to someone and figure out how to automate that output. So don't just build something and cross your fingers. It's almost never going to work. Now, if you have experience in the industry, that's one thing. Maybe you do, in which case you can do it that way. But you need to have an end product that you are able to produce that has value to people. And, you know, if people have spent, and then you need to build a business case. Everybody wants to build the product. Nobody wants to build a business case, right? So one of the pieces of software that I built was and this was crazy back in the day to build portable stuff. Now everyone's got phones and tablets, but back in the day, it was really crazy to build stuff you could take on site. So what I did was I built, here are the typical questions when you do an environmental site assessment called an ESA. An environmental site assessment is you're going to buy a piece of land. You need to go and do soil samples to make sure there's no weird, like, oh, 50 years ago, this was a battery factory and there's all kinds of crazy toxic stuff in the ground, or you know, you need to go and make sure that it was never used as a gas station because there might still be, you know, half rotting underground storage tanks buried in the ground and all that. So these things used to cost about $2,500 because you'd have to go out, take a bunch of notes, write a whole report and all of that. So I got the price of it down. Let me see here. Let's see if I remember these numbers. It's been a while. So I got it from $2,500 down to $1,500, right? And because people could go and they could take notes or take notes on a computer, and then the computer would automatically generate the report for them. So it was much, much faster. Because you're not selling a product. You're not charging money. You are giving people money. You are giving people money. So when I worked with companies in Canada, I'd say, you know, and I created a whole program to make this business case that actually produced a whole business case. So you'd say, okay, how many of these ESAs, how many environmental site assessments do you do in any given year? Oh, okay, so you do, you know, it was like, oh, we do 50, you know, we do 50 of these, right? Okay, so given that the price was $2,500, now it's $1,500, you do 50, that's $50,000 a year that you're saving. My software is $75,000, it pays for itself in 18 months, everything after that is just profit. It's just, right? I'm not taking the money. I'm not taking $75,000. I'm giving them $1,000 off every site assessment. And this is a sort of typical example, right? Because most people want to sell their vision. They want to sell their cool stuff. You know, and if you're Steve Jobs and it's a generic consumer product, sure, okay. But even that has to have cool, gooey stuff that Apple had way before, well, Xerox had before the IBM, and Apple had before, after Xerox, but before the IBM. So You're not charging people. You're not taking money from them. You're not selling a product. You are giving them money. You are giving them time. You are giving them pleasure. You're giving them ease, anything like that, right? I mean, when I would push a button, and that was very early on, I automated Word 95 when you had to write the code in Word, and there was no debugging. It was crazy. So when you know, here's how you enter the information. It's real easy, real simple. And here's how the information is validated to make sure it doesn't contradict each other. And then I pushed a button and Word would start up and it would fill in a whole report that normally would take people, you know, 2 days to write, and people could see it just being filled in right away. And the report even had, footnotes. Jeez, I should find this software somewhere. I still got it somewhere, I'm sure. It would actually put in footnotes. So UST underground storage tank, and PVCs, we would define those, and AGSTs, above ground storage tanks. So not only would it produce the report, but because the report would often go to non-technical people, all of the technical, had this giant database of technical terms, all of the technical terms would have footnotes. It would have a table of contents. It would have the company logo. It would just like a beautiful polished report, which you could just read over. Maybe you need to tweak a little bit here and there. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And you need to get people's eyes to light up like that. I mean, you've probably seen this in some fashion or in some manner. Something you see where you're just like, holy crap. Like, I remember when I first, the first player I had was a Rio 500. Her name is Rio. It was a Rio 500. And boy, what did it have? 64 megs. And I think I got an expansion of 32 extra megs. And I mean, that thing was fantastic. At the moment I saw, oh my gosh, you know, I don't have to say, I mean, I still know, I could probably go through all of this. I still remember the mixtape I had for working out in university. It started off with Paul Simon's The Obvious Child. Then it went to Face the Face by Pete Townsend. Then it went to Dragon Attack by Queen. And then it went to It Can Happen by Yes. And I just, that was my workout tape. And the idea that you could just load up. You know, I used to love working out to Eminence Front by The Who and stuff like that. So I just remember when I first saw that stuff, or I remember the first time I got a five gig hard drive MP3 player. Ah, fantastic, fantastic. So you've probably seen those kinds of things, or if you've, you know, I remember the first time I saw a flat screen plasma TV, because it always bothered me, the shudderiness of the regular TVs, and I'm a high res kind of guy, right? But you've got to have something where people are just, you got to have it, push button, produce report, fantastic, right? Somebody says, you mentioned that with your product, you're giving people time, money, etc. Could you also consider giving people functionality? For example, without a camera, you can't stream. But that's not a good example, Joe. I mean, I'm using a sort of specific camera for streaming. This is a Sony. But most people will stream. They just start their streaming with a phone or a tablet or, you know, whatever, right? Built-in webcam in there. On their notebook, a Windows notebook, or I suppose in particular, Microsoft had good cameras on their notebooks, or on, an Apple MacBook and so on, right? So. Yeah, I mean, of course, functionality, for sure, for sure. But the problem with functionality is then it's just cost-benefit. And cost-benefit doesn't wow. The wow is, I gotta have it. I gotta have it. And with a camera, okay, well, you have to say, well, yes, your phone has a camera, but, you know, this is much better because X, Y, and Z, or yes, your notebook has a camera, but this is much better because of X, Y, and Z, and so on, right? So then it's just cost benefits. And if you are starting a new product, a new company, really, you got to aim for that just blow your eyelids back wow factor. Like, you got to have people sweating sex juice from their armpits. Just got to have it. Got to have it. To the point where they're not the same after your presentation. That's what I was always trying to give, right? Is you're not the same. Like, your mind has just been stretched into it. Like, you know, once I saw an MP3 player, and then what did I get? I got another one because WMA was a really good format because you could get half the size and similar audio quality. And I got 128 megs, and WMAs were half the size. So it was effectively 256 megs. So I didn't, you know, and I realized, of course, that before I would go to a workout, I'd spend 10 minutes picking my playlist, which was not the most efficient thing, but it was kind of cool and still a lot easier than making a mixtape. So yeah, just have it, right? You just gotta have it. Gotta have it. Can't live without it, right? Can't live without it. I used to listen to audiobooks that were giant boxes of tapes. So. Oh, yeah. Like I mentioned this in a couple of streams ago. I took a Tesla for a test drive. I mean, I'm perfectly happy with my 8-year-old secondhand car, but I was just kind of curious. What is it like to have a car drive you somewhere? Now, I got to tell you, it's the greatest thing I've seen in I don't even know how long. I mean, other than, you know, me in doing these live streams and you. Thank you for the tip. And Denisa. So it's the greatest thing. If I was even remotely in the market for a car, I would just move heaven and earth to try and find a way to get one. So, I mean, it's incredible. It's mind-blowing how good it is. So, yeah, don't, this is true with life as a whole. It's not about what you get, it's about what you give. I mean, obviously, I want donations and support for the show, which I appreciate at freedomain.com/donate, but I'm trying to provide value to you. I'm trying to give you a mindset that in life, what really matters is what you give, not what you're going to get. Right? If you focus on what you give, on what the value that you can provide to people in business, in romance, in friendship, wherever, if you focus on what you can provide, you'd be amazed at how reciprocal people will be, at how much they will want to provide back. So, yeah. You've got to just be passionate enough to just build incredible, incredible stuff. And if you don't have some incredible idea, like with me, it was on-site entering data and generating reports in a word processor. And later on, because we had to customize the system for everyone, and that turned out to be quite time-consuming, so I built a whole interface that allowed customers to customize their own system. It would build tables, queries, forms, reports, you name it. So, and it was just like, oh, you want something new? You can add it. Here it shows up in the interface. And then I mapped everything in the system into a database, including where the entry boxes, the forms, the controls, they're called, right? The entry boxes. And so it could be reproduced on the web. And here you can make this change and do this demonstration. Oh, you want to add this piece of information. You want to delete this one. You have this drop down, this whole new table form report. Boom, there it is. Oh, and let's go over to the web system, hit refresh. Oh, look, there it shows up on the web and you can enter it from wherever. Like it was just, amazing stuff. I called it the database builder. I was actually looking at building that as a separate product and going off and selling that. But for a variety of reasons, I never did. But it was amazing stuff back then. Amazing. All right. Yeah, just in life, just figure out what you can provide to people. And really, there's the best route to success is just relentlessly try to provide value. I'm doing this 20 years. I'm still relentlessly trying to provide value, right? I mean, this kind of stuff would be very expensive to get from a business consultant, but I'm just handing it out like candy. The Tesla avoiding the moose is what sold me on Tesla initially. Yeah. The wow factor is big. What really differentiates your product from the rest? What extra value does it bring? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was a director of marketing, I convinced the board to pay money to give me access to a business database that gave me a bunch of statistics on companies, obviously the official ones for public companies and the guesstimates for private companies. And then I built a whole program that produced about 1,500 query letters that said, you know, here's your annual revenue, here's what you spend on this. Estimate, you know, here's what our system saves. And it produced a whole chart and graphs and pretty stuff and a whole document that said, you know, here's the cost of the software. Here's the value it saves every year. Your cash flow positive is in, you know, 4.2 years. And here's, you know, so it just produced an entire series. And we sent these all out and got a huge amount of interest in the product because it was really customized. Now, some of the data was off, which, you know, we can only do so much with, but it was, you know, that was, to get 1,500 personalized query letters out to major industry factors showing it looks completely personalized. And this is like 30 years ago. It looks completely personalized and it tells them exactly how quickly the software will pay for itself. What is the ROI? Ah, great stuff. Great stuff. All right. Let's see here. Somebody is saying that their question may have gone. All right. Denisa says, oh, I noticed something in a recent call-in. You know how sometimes when people tell a story about childhood, they seem possessed by their parents in the telling of it? Well, I noticed that when you tell the story of your dad neglecting you as a baby while he played tennis and you got into the oil or car fluid, no, sadly, it was weed killer. And your mom was just so mad at him, it was a precipice to her leaving. It sounds to me like that's her narrative because she was also very neglectful, right? I could be very off. She was neglectful, but not to the point where I was into, I got into weed killer and drank it, which, you know, could have been why I got the cancer and like any number of things, right? So I remember very clearly being with my father and being very little, maybe 3 or 4 years old. We were in a town in Ireland, could have been Athlone, because that's near where I was born. And I remember it being in a big crowd in a market, and my father was gone. It was just gone. And I remember wandering around for quite some time. I remember, you know, very kindly people leaning over, oh, you lost, son. And then they took me to a police station, and I chatted with the police, and they gave me little drawing pads and let me play with handcuffs and all of that. Fortunately, that was not a foreshadow. And eventually my father, I was hours later, my father showed up at the police station and got me back. I obviously can't really fathom my father's state of mind, and he's fairly lengthy dead now. But it seems to me that that would just come out of annoyance and irritation. Oh, just keep up, you know, that kind of stuff, right? I mean, I remember when I went hiking with my father, he was just, you know, he was a dot up the mountain. Like he just, you know, like I'm thirsty. It's like, well, we suck on this rock and produce saliva. And apparently that was suck on a rock. It's like, is this an analogy for your heart? So, yeah, of course, you know, my mother had her narrative about my father for sure. And it was clearly not objective. But I also did spend some time with my father, and he was impatient, and children were slowing him down and just to keep up and pay attention. And, you know, it was not very, so, I mean, I do have some, you're right. I mean, of course, it's my mother's perspective, but I do have some direct experience of my own. So, but I appreciate the comment. Thank you. I don't, you know, I'm about to change line of work and I've chosen to study IT, either DevOps or MLOPS, but I'm not sure which one is the better choice. Given your background in IT, what do you recommend? I don't know what MLOPS is. Deploy and maintain machine learning models. Yeah. I mean, if I had the choice between going into artificial intelligence or just straight up development, I would go into artificial intelligence because one is growing and one is shrinking, right? The IT is excuse me, that's so much professionalism right there, but AI is growing and regular coding is diminishing. I love how the people on the left are complaining that the AI power usage is so high, right? AI power usage is so high. And it's like, but the leftists are largely responsible for that because they demand that the AI not be offensive or factual. It has to be woke compliant to a large degree, and you have to trick it into giving you information that's not politically correct. So, you know, I assume that about 95% of the coding and therefore to some degree the heat requirements of AI is because of woke leftist bullshit. And so the fact that they're complaining about that is funny. You know, if you just let AI tell the truth, its energy requirements will go down to about 5% of what they are now. But of course, you know, they love playing gotcha, you know, these petulant low-T bullies, right? Oh, I made the AI say the stuff that's really bad. Is it factual? Doesn't matter. It's upsetting. All right. Did other companies start copying your software? What do you think they did to add wow factor when your software was already out there? For example, if another company comes out with self-driving, it might not add the wow factor since we have already seen Tesla. Is that when branding or marketing, et cetera, comes in to help differentiate products? Yeah, I mean, other people did start copying software, in fact, fairly blatantly. And I was like, great. Yeah, go for it. Because I'm already two generations ahead. Like, I was a real idea hamster when it came to software. I was constantly scanning for code I could get, or ActiveX controls, they used to be called, or other ways that I could bring spice and value add to the software. Like, I was constantly working with all of that. So people did, and they did. I saw people, they even came up with the same, oh, look, we'll generate reports in a word processor. It's like, yeah, but I already did that 3 years ago. And I would point that out. I would say, look, I mean, these guys, they probably did this thing where they produce a report in a word processor, which is kind of nice because then you can edit it, right? And I said, yeah, and you know, I mean, I'm not saying they took the idea from me, but I will say that I was doing it three or four years ago, and they're just doing it now. That's just an example of I'll always be ahead. All right. Would Python developer be better then? I really can't answer that, sorry. What was my favorite programming language? I mean, I hate to say it, but it was .NET and BASIC, VBA originally, and then I loved BASIC, especially when you compile BASIC to native. I did some work in Java, and I counted this up once. I knew 18 different computer languages to varying degrees, but I was most familiar with and found it fun to work with. I did some work in C#, but yeah, VB.NET and the .NET languages in BASIC were just great for me, because the, you know, BASIC was originally an interpreted language, so it cost you a lot. Like Java, it cost you a lot of processing power. But when it was able to compile to native, it was great. I just jumped in for a minute. Any thoughts on India and Pakistan? First time in my life, I'm really aware of the dangers we can all be in. I mean, there are people who, it's not a philosophical culture, right? Not a philosophical culture. So of course, what that means is that they're going to be constantly at odds based on tribalism. I mean, we get philosophy or we get tribalism. And of course, I think it's fairly safe to say that because we haven't chosen to off-ramp to philosophy, we're getting increased tribalism. So. All right. Yeah, I mean, if you won't raise your children to be philosophical, then you're going to end up fighting over a bunch of largely made up superstitious nonsense and collectivism. So if there's this level of conflict, my answer is peaceful parenting, philosophy, reason, evidence. That's my argument. If people don't want to do that, then they're going to fight. Right? Reason or violence. That's the only way we have to resolve disputes. Reason or violence, right? Forced redistribution is violence. Voluntarily negotiated price in a free market is reason. You don't see Indian and Pakistani scientists or mathematicians lobbing bombs at each other, right? Because they have an objective methodology to determine who's right, which is reason and evidence, right? Same thing with, I mean, any number of things, right? So when people are fighting, it's just because they have chosen to reject reason, and they choose irrationality and superstition and collectivism and all that kind of stuff. And so they're going to fight. That's as predictable as sunrise. It's sort of like, you know, it's like you say, well, what do you think about people who don't exercise and their muscles are weak and their bones are weak? What do you think about that? It's like, well, I mean, I'm no doctor, but my understanding is that's kind of what happens if you don't exercise, is your muscles get weak, right? You don't have a little bit of muscle. I don't have much, but a little bit there. Not too bad for 58, pushing 59. Not terrible, right? Not terrible. I keep thinking I have abs. So it seems to be a trick of the light, but could be. I certainly am doing my sit-ups. So when you say to people, or if you say to me, well, what do you think of people who've got weak muscles and brittle bones and they don't exercise? It's like, well, that's the result of not exercising. I mean, I don't know what to think about it other than that's the result. What do you think about people who don't exercise and eat a huge amount of calories and get fat? What do you mean, what do I think about it? That's the inevitable result of not exercising and eating excessive calories. You're going to get fat. Except for the occasional listener here who have metabolisms of 1,200 coked up hamsters on a wheel. Right? So, I mean, what do I think? There's just inevitable consequences, right? So you have two cultures in Pakistan and India that to a large degree reject reason and evidence. So they're going to fight. And until they start working with reason and evidence, they're going to fight. Reason or rule is binary. There's nothing in between. I mean, maybe. I mean, because people were asking me about Israel versus the Palestinians. I mean, look, I think that Israel is a more rational culture, for sure. But, you know, there's still a lot of anti-rationality in both modes of thought, and there's just going to be fights. Just going to be fights. Do you want personal virtue based upon integrity, or do you want collective acceptance based upon conformity? So, all I can do is say that if you reject reason, you're going to end up with violence. So, if there's violence, all you do is say, well, is this a culture that rejects reason? And to a large degree, they do. So. We'll say that some fairly funny memes coming out of this, though. I'm not saying I approve of all of them, but some of them can be kind of funny. All right. Questions, issues, challenges, problems. Let me see if I have any other juicy stuff saved in my bookmarks. Yeah, The Last of Us. I'm going to be a dad. Wild. Wild. Do you care at all about the O'Keefe stuff that dropped today? Do you? Do you? Do you? non-reason-based societies figured nukes out. No, I don't think they did. I think that the non-reason-based societies... The non-reason-based societies just stole the scientific advancements of the more reason-based societies. Although, of course, in the free market, you wouldn't have developed nukes. You'd have developed nuclear power, but not nuclear weapons in that way, usually. I mean, certainly if the world was generally free, yeah. It's pretty funny. Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter, Bill and Ted, are headed to Broadway to star in a production of Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot. Isn't that wild? I hate to see it. I'd watch that. I would absolutely watch that. I think they're two very funny actors. Two very funny actors. Keanu Reeves, it's almost like he doesn't have a personality. He's just performer guy. A very tragic life, though. There once was a ship that sailed to sea, and the name of the ship was the Billy O'B. This, Mike Sinovich has written about this, and I talked about this even over the time of COVID. Mike wrote a day ago, once the Stasi files were opened, this is sort of the East German police, once the Stasi files were opened, people were able to see who reported them, right, to the government, where you would get, you know, kidnapped, tortured, killed, exiled, sent to gulags. Once the Stasi files were opened, people were able to see who reported them. It was often family and close friends. He said, there's a reason I behave the way I do. I'm one of the kindest people on earth, but I have to fight. I understand who will do evil to us, those who pretend to be friends. That's wild. That's true, though. I mean, I've known that for a long time. You know, people are like, how dare you criticize family? It's like, family will turn you into the secret police, like that, a lot of times. A lot. Oh, what dropped? Okay, Joe put the link in here. So this is, O'Keefe has been teasing this for a while. It dropped a little bit late. I don't know, maybe he's on the West Coast. 5:30 p.m., May 7th, 2025. World exclusive, Prince Andrew was effing underage girls. Tape of Royal Family Advisor exposes Prince Andrew's sexual relations with minors and deep ties to Jeffrey Epstein. And O'Keefe Media Group, you should check it out for sure. I'll just read the first little bit, but you should go to O'Keefe Media Group. In revelation caught on hidden camera by O'Keefe Media Group, American businessman and longtime royal insider John Bryan, yeah, that's right, never trust anyone with two first names. I'm looking at you, George Michael, has come forward with damning claims about Prince Andrew's personal relationship with convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Bryan, a trusted advisor to the Duke of York, also alleged that Prince Andrew lied to him about his involvement in sexual misconduct with minors. I knew he, Prince Andrew, saw him, Jeffrey Epstein, said Bryan, but he lied to me that he was such a close friend, revealed Bryan, referring to Prince Andrew's personal relationship with Epstein. So, I'll skip a little bit here. I did a big thing in the Daily Mail saying that I believed Andrew Bryan recounted to our undercover OMG journalist, adding, and then I found out he was lying. I was so pissed. When asked what Andrew had lied about, Bryan didn't mince words, that he was effing underage girls. That's not cool. Ooh, that's some amoral stuff, right? Some amoral stuff. Now, I mean, I got to tell you, the rumors about Prince Andrew have been around since the days when Johnny Carson was hosting The Tonight Show. So, I mean, is it hearsay? I suppose, but it's interesting. I mean, is it a bombshell? I mean, I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, maybe to normies, but normies aren't probably going to get touched by it much. All right, let me get back to your any questions or comments? Ba-bum. Yeah, the Epstein files, I mean, is it Bondi who's saying that somebody was saying that they're still going through it all? It's hundreds of victims and all that kind of stuff. I don't see how they can let this stuff out at all. I mean, it could completely eviscerate most of the top political and entertainment and media people. I would just completely eviscerate them because either people were involved or they knew about it or had a reason to know. And I don't know. I think it would cause a significant mental breakdown for a lot of people, especially if the videos are out, which I doubt they will be. I mean, I thought they were long gone, but apparently they have some. And again, who knows? Who knows? All right. Let me see if you've got any other questions. I listened to the recent donor show, No Dates, Once Wife, while falling asleep. I fell asleep off and on and had an incredibly informative lucid dream while it played. Thanks for the show. I had one of these lightning strike moments you spoke about before. Oh, Chris, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. And thanks, of course, to the very generous listener for sharing his thoughts and feelings. I did a call, gosh, was it yesterday? This woman, she is looking for a husband, and she was a model and modeled in like Japan and South Korea and New York and so on. And if you it's going out to donors first, but if you she agreed that if anybody wants to date her, that they could email me host@freedomain.com. It's a very, very nice young woman. A very nice young woman. All right. This is from, gosh, I should know this. This is Fiverr. 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 Michael Mika Kaufman. Hey, team. I've always believed in radical candor, and despite those who sugarcoat reality to avoid stating the unpleasant truth and despise those, the very basis of radical candor is care. You care enough about your friends and colleagues to tell them the truth because you want them to be able to understand it, grow, and succeed. So here's the unpleasant truth. AI is coming for your jobs. Heck, it's coming for my job too. This is a wake-up call. It does not matter if you are a programmer, designer, product manager, data scientist, lawyer, customer support rep, salesperson, or a finance person, AI is coming for you. You must understand that what were once considered easy tasks will no longer exist. What were considered hard tasks will be the new easy, and what were considered impossible tasks will be the new hard. If you do not become an exceptional talent at what you do, a master, you will face the need for career change in a matter of months. I'm not trying to scare you. I'm not talking about your job at Fiverr. I'm talking about your ability to stay in your profession, in the industry. Are we all doomed? Not all of us, but those who will not wake up and understand the new reality fast are unfortunately doomed. What can we do? Well, first of all, take a moment. Let this sink in. Drink a glass of water. Scream hard in front of a mirror if it helps you. Now relax. Panic hasn't solved problems for anyone. Let's talk about what would help you become an exceptional talent in your field. Study, research, and master the latest AI solutions in your field. Try multiple solutions and figure out what gives you superpowers. By superpowers, I mean the ability to generate more outcomes per unit of time with better quality per delivery. Programmers, code, cursor, customer support, tickets, intercom, Finn, Senti, Sum, lawyers, contracts, Lexis plus AI, Legora, etc. Find the most knowledgeable people on our team who can help you become more familiar with the latest and greatest in AI. Time is the most valuable asset we have. If you're working like it's 2024, you're doing it wrong. You're expected and needed to do more, faster, and more efficiently now. Become a prompt engineer. Google is dead. LLM and Gen AI are the new basics. And if you're not using them as experts, your value will decrease before you know what hits you. Get involved in making the organization more efficient using AI tools and technologies. It does not make sense to hire more people before we learn how to do more with what we have. Understand the company strategy well and contribute to helping it achieve its goals. Don't wait to be invited to a meeting where we ask each participant for ideas. There will be no such meeting. Instead, pitch your ideas proactively. Stop waiting for the world or your place of work to hand you opportunities to learn and grow. Create those opportunities yourself. I vow to help anyone who wants to help themselves. If you don't like what I wrote, if you think I'm full of shit, or just an asshole who's trying to scare you, be my guest and disregard this message. I love all of you and wish you nothing but good things. But I honestly don't think that a promising professional future awaits you if you disregard reality. If, on the other hand, you understand deep inside that I'm right and want all of us to be on the winning side of history, join me in a conversation about where we go from here as a company and as individuals, individual professionals. We have a magnificent company and a bright future ahead of us. We just need to wake up and understand that it won't be pretty or easy. It will be hard and demanding, but damn well worth it. This message is food for thought. I've asked Shelley to free up time on my calendar in the next few weeks so that those of you who wish to sit with me and discuss your future can do so. I look forward to seeing you. Yours, Mika, my mitochondria, whatever. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Mika. Did that call-in model ever go to Dubai? No, she did not. She did not, although that is a very reasonable question. All right. All right. Let's get to you and your questions. A couple more. Appreciate you dropping by freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Would very much appreciate that. freedomain.com/donate. If you're listening later too, very helpful. All right. The show needs you. All right. Complex question in a few words. I'm going through a difficult divorce. My ex-wife has taken the kids. Should I concentrate on being close to the kids and live in an area that makes me weaker financially and less of a support circle? Or should I set up where I'm stronger and prepare a space for the kids to come in when the time is right? Well, you've got to tell me how old the kids are. It's one thing if they're 17. It's one thing if they're 4. That's what I don't know. I'm really, like, obviously I can't tell you what to do. You're aware of that, right? You're aware of that. with a divorce that is contentious, 13 and 15. Well, how can they take the kids? Don't they get a choice? They get a choice at that age, don't they? Don't they have some say in where they go? I don't know that they can just get taken. But again, I'm no lawyer, so I don't know. Don't tell me where you are, but I don't know that you can just take the kids, can you? I just don't know. So it's tough to know. There are certainly stories of men who've tried to pour everything into a bad divorce and lose just about everything. Sanity, finances, access to kids, money, of course, right? It's just brutal. On the other hand, if you bail when the kids might need you and you might have access to them, then you've left something important behind. In my view, just absolutely personal opinion, no prescription to action. In my view, I sort of try and put myself in this kind of position because I've had a number of calls with people about this, quite a number of calls with people about this kind of topic. If your wife is really hostile, it's going to be really difficult, unpleasant, and you're basically going to have to bite your tongue, not tell the truth, and be kind of emasculated for the next couple of years till your kids are adults. You got 5 years till your 13-year-old is an adult, right? Then, I mean, all they see is a kind of broken guy biting his tongue, ducking legal blows from the ex, from their mom. That's probably not very inspiring. You know, the other option, and again, I don't know what you should do. I'm not in any way telling you what to do. But another option is put up stakes, do your best, try and stay in touch, go start a new family and get it right this time. You know, pick the right woman, get it right. Right. Thank you, Durbins. Freedomain.com/donate. Yeah. Do you pour yourself into a hostile situation where you have no control and you're facing a very aggressive person who's a very, very lawyered up? I don't know. Or do you say, okay, well, kind of faff this up, stay around for the kids as best I can, ready and be available, but I can't have any needs here because I'm just going to get messed up. And do I try and figure out where I went wrong and try and figure out how I can get it right with the next family? I don't know the answer. Is it worth being around kids if you're just kind of broken and frightened and have to bite your tongue about everything? I don't know. I mean, obviously you want to be around your kids as best you can, but I don't know. I mean, maybe things will cool down with your ex and you can find a more reasonable accommodation between you. Maybe that can happen. I don't know. But if it stays, you know, this may be a personal failing of mine, so I mean, I could be completely wrong about all of this, but I don't let my kids, I don't let my daughter see me in a humiliated or bullied position. You know, once or twice over the years, someone has come up kind of aggressive towards me, and I'll just push back hard. Will not be intimidated, will not be bowed down, will not be cowed down. I would just push back hard. I mean, I think I remember one time I had to really raise my voice and tell someone to step back. No fear, eye contact. I feel like a cobra flaring my neck. So you, it's not real great for your kids to see you getting pushed around. And if that's the situation with your ex, I don't know, but you know, there's other answers rather than just hang around and get beaten up. You know, because your kids are going to have questions, and if you can't tell the truth, they'll know deep down that you're lying, right? And it's going to be really tough. because they may not know for years as to why or what's happening. So who knows? All right. Any other last questions? Trump made his 143rd executive order to ban the gain-of-function research in China. Well, I don't think 100%. But, yeah, the rhinos, right? You got to get this stuff out of executive orders and into the actual law. I don't know if they're really working that hard to do that. I mean, it's crazy. Because all these executive orders can just be undone by the next president, right? And somebody's introduced legislation to try and undo the Patriot Act. Good luck with that, right? Now, Jeffrey Sachs, interesting guy, intelligent guy, obviously, good communicator. I think he wants one world government, but whatever, right? So Kyra posted that Jeffrey Sachs said the U.S. government did experiments testing on bats they had at the government laboratory in Montana. The virus worked on the bats, but there was a problem. The U.S. had different bats than the ones in Southeast Asia, so they sent the virus to Wuhan, China to test on their bats. Now, of course, yeah, I don't know. Who knows if this is true? He seems very convinced. I don't know if he's compromised. I don't know if it's true. I think there's definitely were. I mean, I think that's pretty established that there were bioweapons labs in Ukraine, many of them, I think. And that would have given Russia some pause for sure. All right. Last questions, issues, challenges, problems. Happy to hear. Yeah, could it be that I might end up, when I did a whole video called The Case Against China, right? Could it be the case that I end up having to issue an apology to China? I don't know. Hard to say. Certainly, of course, China is saying that it came out of the U.S., but who knows, right? I don't know that there'd be any smoking guns at this point, right? All right. I think we did a good show. I think we had a great set of conversations. Please don't forget freedomain.com/call if you would like to schedule the call-in show. We do private call-in shows, just one-on-one, where I can be very frank and very direct. You can do public call-in shows, which, of course, are free. And we got some great call-in shows in the pipe coming out. We got a guy who's never dated and wants a wife. We've got the model who wants a husband and a former model who wants a husband and lots of great stuff coming down the pipe. And I really do. How long does the spike protein stay in the body? Well, you can go look that up, but I don't think it's a short amount of time from what I've read. So, yeah, and for the guy who's got the divorce, we can do a private call-in show or you can do a no details public call-in show, whatever you like. Happy to take that on. And I hope that you have a wonderful evening. If you could help out the show, freedomain.com/donate, I would really, really appreciate that. And lots of love from up here, my friends. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.